Good evening and welcome in to some late night Chiefs talk here on Sports Radio 810. Hope you're not too tired to hang out with us for the next hour or so. If you are, grab the podcast later on. Maybe listening to the podcast right now. Depends on how time works and you're listening to the radio show. Wherever it is, though, that you are listening to us tonight, thanks for doing so here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Briscoe with you for this next hour or so. We're just talking Chiefs. We're going to recap a little bit of Chiefs-Vikings, maybe look ahead, talk a little bit about Patrick Mahomes. Seth Kizer of The Athletic will join us for his weekly Tuesday Chiefs conversation coming up here next segment. We will start that conversation by recapping some things that happened whenever he came to town this weekend, as he was in town for Chiefs-Vikings. So that's going to be exciting. Get ready for that as much as you possibly can. But the Chiefs beat the Vikings on Sunday, and they did it with Matt Moore, and they did it with one huge run on the ground, and they did it with a defensive performance that I think is worthy of further evaluation. And altogether, it was a pretty impressive win for a team that, without Patrick Mahomes, is on par with a lot of the things that the Minnesota Vikings can do. I have never been a Kirk Cousins believer. I told you coming up to that game that I thought the Chiefs defense with Steve Spagnuolo would turn Kirk Cousins back into a pumpkin before midnight, I guess at midnight, and they did. The three touchdowns on Kirk Cousins' stat line are in no way indicative of the game that he had and what the Chiefs made him do and made the entire Vikings offense do in this game. So I said coming into this game, I expected the pumpkin turning for Kirk Cousins, and I expected the Chiefs defense to probably be the thing that gives us the most to talk about in this game in a positive way, and that is how it panned out. I also think I had this game being 27-24. It was 26-23, so I'm going to go ahead and chalk this up to me just being unbelievably right. I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back. Oh, hurt my shoulder. This is a genuinely super, super interesting game here. And if you saw this on Twitter earlier today, my first column went up on The Athletic today. I'm going to start doing weekly Chiefs columns on The Athletic, along with all the stuff you can get with Seth and Nate Taylor. And we get me once a week up there. I'm going to be doing that throughout the rest of the Chiefs season. And I felt like I knew what I was going to write about before the game, and then the game panned out in a way that made it really easy to stick to my guns there. The Chiefs defense has shown genuine improvement in these last 3 weeks, and they've done it in really unique ways that I think can only leave you with an immense amount of, if not confidence, at least optimism. The Chiefs against the Broncos hardly had a tremendous task at hand. They made Joe Flacco look awful. And even as they lost Mahomes early in that game and then had to deal with all of the repercussions of bringing in a quarterback that hadn't played in a good long while, the Chiefs defense was really good in that game, and they're very aggressive. They blitzed Joe Flacco, and they made him look like Joe Flacco. The next week, you get the same. You get a much more difficult task in Aaron Rodgers, and the Chiefs actually stuck to their guns blitzing him almost more than I would have expected in retrospect, because good quarterbacks are usually able to handle the blitz, but Rodgers was really bothered by it. But then against the Vikings, you get a quarterback in Kirk Cousins who's actually been exceptional against the blitz this year in terms of passer rating at the very least, and the Chiefs don't blitz anymore. They get way more conservative in terms of sending guys. They make Kirk Cousins have to try to find a spot in a very crowded secondary, and routinely the Chiefs got pressure with three, and it was with the return of Chris Jones, who was huge, and we'll talk to Seth about him here in a little bit. It was the main crux of his big first review of the week up on The Athletic. You get Chris Jones back, and he gets moved around. They play some three-man fronts where he's on the end. They play some four-man fronts with him on the inside. Early in the game, on that first third down, I was rewatching it. It just jumped out to me, and I just thought it's just funny to see that on the first third down of the game, the Chiefs showed the Vikings a three-man front with Chris Jones at one of the ends, and then Tano Passanio just lined up head up over the center just as a nose tackle. Tano Passanio doesn't look like Vince Wilfork, but that's who you usually think of in a spot like that. And so with all the different things the Chiefs have been able and willing to show this season, I'm really optimistic, not just about the fact that what I believe right now is that this defense is good enough to be the supplementary unit to the offense at full strength to win a Super Bowl for this team. I'm legitimately at that point right now. But it still feels like Spagnuolo is feeling things out. You got the influx of Reggie Ragland after being inactive for a couple of weeks and then not really playing at all for the next few weeks. He comes in and gets all of these snaps at the Sam spot, which moves Damian Wilson to the Will, and Hitchens stays in the middle. And that just revitalizes the Chiefs' run defense. It's not something that I'm terribly hung up on. You know how I feel about the running game, I imagine. But whenever it's like an incredible glaring hole, you just don't love to have any of those in a unit whenever you think you're going to a Super Bowl. So that gets revitalized by these linebackers moving around. Plus, Ragland has always been a totally competent pass rusher from that spot. If you do want to blitz him either as, you know, as the fifth guy making an actual blitz, or if you want to have a three-man front and then bring Ragland somewhere across that line and make a offense have to account for him in the moment, they're all adjustments that make sense. And they're all adjustments that show different things. And we're also seeing really great play out of Derek Nnadi and Colin Saunders. Both of those guys started off this season really rough. It seemed like Nnadi had maybe regressed a little bit, and Colin Saunders looked super overmatched in his first action in the NFL, which makes sense because the NFL is hard and he's coming from a small school and all that. But they have, like, visibly, eye test improved over these last several weeks. You've seen them making plays and just chucking dudes on that Vikings offensive line on Sunday. Frank Clark is out and probably coming back for this game against the Titans because he was actually out there for practice on some level back last Friday. So it seems like he's probably working his way back. You get Chris Jones, who is just an absolute game wrecker. You have more confidence in your linebackers you've had at any point this year. Charvarius Ward just, like, makes a great play every week now. You're working in Mo Claiborne with Bashaud Breeland and Rashad Fenton and Kendall Fuller, probably also nearly back. He was also questionable for this game, ultimately didn't play. You're seeing, hopefully, the return of Eric Fisher very, very soon. Like, having this return of, if the Chiefs really do get all these guys back healthy, having this return against the Titans almost feels unfair because I could see it being a soul-crushing sort of domination over the Titans if the Chiefs do get everything back together all at once. If they wait on Mahomes another week, and it is Matt Moore, I think the Chiefs win that game against the Titans. I think that they're the Titans. Like, just everything we've ever known of the Tennessee Titans to be. It's Ryan Tannehill. I think we're fine here. But I just have, and we discussed this on Times Ours yesterday as well, on The Athletic. Just to keep crying, I guess I'm going to say The Athletic 47 times today. But I don't know if it's just clearing a low bar because last year Bob Sutton provided so little in terms of flexibility or ingenuity or attempting to find the new thing or even just a different, maybe better thing. I don't know if that makes me easier to please at this point, but man, watching this defense feels so, so different. And it's without the most expensive player they brought in this offseason. I don't know if Frank Clark's going to ever earn every penny of that paycheck. I don't know if that will ultimately be justified. I really don't. But let's just say that he comes back and is merely a very good player for the Chiefs this season. And Alex Okafor comes back and is just merely the version of Alex Okafor we saw at the beginning of the year. It allows Steve Spagnuolo to continue with all of this, finding different spots for different guys, coming up with the best combination. Whenever you don't have to worry about, is Emmanuel Ogba good on his own on the edge there? And again, this isn't about either justifying or not justifying the Frank Clark deal. That's a different conversation that I'm happy to have. But if you just say Frank Clark's over there, I know that edge is set, and I know that a few times a game he's going to disrupt the passer, so I don't need to bring extra from that side. The Chiefs start getting to the point where the sort of neutral factory settings are good enough. And last year they weren't, and then last year Bob Sutton never updated the UI. He never changed anything from the factory settings. It was always just as it came out of the box, and it wasn't good enough last year. Spagnuolo has realized, I got an iPhone not terribly long ago. I miss Google Calendar. I did miss it, so I installed it. I got a lot of the factory settings here are doing well for me. But I really like Google Calendar and Google Maps, so I installed those, and I'm using those on my iPhone. Spagnuolo has been doing that to cover up some of the deficiencies of, you know, his Apple Maps, getting him lost in the forest. For a while in there, I think if he would have just left factory settings, I don't think the Darren Lee, Ben Neiman linebacker group was helping their cause any. They adjusted even this week just to keeping an eye on Dalvin Cook. He had 21 carries for 71 yards with a long of 12. You will take that every single time. It's the best running back the Chiefs are going to face in the regular season this year. It's probably the best running back they're going to face at any point all year unless they face Alvin Kamara in the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs didn't let him run all over them. They didn't let him cause havoc out of the backfield. He had one relatively long play and then a couple of nice ones out of the backfield as a pass catcher. And not all of them were out of the backfield, I should say. Some of them, you know, you can move guys out and everything. That was something that caused the Chiefs a lot of trouble against the Packers. The Chiefs adjusted to that. Spagnuolo was in there changing some of the settings, so it's not all factory default. But whenever you have a device where everything is just about perfect whenever it comes out of the box, the changes you can make can be subtle. They can be for improvements, not having to worry about covering a deficiency. And that's kind of where I feel like Spagnuolo is about to be with this Chiefs defense. I'm in on Tre'Davious Ward. I've talked about him a ton. We talked about him a ton this offseason. His problem was relatively clear. Dude's got to get his head around. Got to play the ball. He's been excellent at that the last several weeks. Excellent. Bashaud Breeland, Mo Claiborne, Rashad Fenton, Kendall Fuller, the latter two swapping in at the slot, the first two playing the other outside corner spot. The mix of those guys, and it has been a mix. The snap count's really interesting for them. But the mix of those guys have created a super competent secondary. Tyrann Mathieu has been excellent. Juan Thornhill's been very good, and also there have been lots of times when I've kind of just glossed over him being out there, which again, when you're a safety, that's okay. It means the ball's not coming in your direction, and when it is, Thornhill seems to be making good plays more often than not. The linebacker group feels relatively fixed, and the defensive line is about to become the rotation that Steve Spagnuolo envisioned it being this offseason, where you're starting with Okafor and Clark on the ends and Chris Jones in the middle, probably with Derek Nnadi next to him. And they'll keep moving Clark around, or Jones around, and we'll talk to Seth about that. But that four-man front, then with the ability to rotate in Colin Saunders on the inside and to do all sorts of different stuff in terms of rushing the passer on obvious passing downs and bringing in Tanel Passanio and Emmanuel Ogba, who have been way outperforming my expectations for them this year. I'm excited and I'm optimistic about a defense that is playing well and is well coached. And it's not perfect, man. Like, they had problems getting on and off the field on Sunday. They had a 12-man penalty, and then the touchdown with only 10 guys on the field, and then they had to burn a timeout, I think. I think there were three big, like, personnel change issues the Chiefs had, and they had some issues in the red zone stopping Kirk Cousins and whichever guy was looking for in the back of the end zone that time in the middle of the field. It's not perfect. There's room to grow, but for the first time, I'm almost happy about that. Because, again, if the version of the Chiefs defense that we've seen these last 3 weeks, which 3 weeks in a row in the NFL against three very different opponents and one outstanding all-world quarterback, one offense that was excellent for an entire month, and then one bad team, I would say that's enough information to start reevaluating your projections. The defense we've seen from these last 3 weeks in very different circumstances, with different amounts of blitzing and different amounts of paying attention to running backs and different personnel groups and different guys who were and weren't injured. If they play like they've played over these 3 weeks with all of those factors evolving, they could and maybe should not only be talked about as plenty good opposite an offense led by the MVP, but good enough to maybe win the Chiefs a game that they didn't win earlier this year. I mean, like, look, the Colts game in terms of points allowed, that they did that enough already once, but they give up 180 yards on the ground, and it's hard to be super excited about a defense in that spot. But if the Chiefs offense stalls against the Bears in week 16, game 15, if the Chiefs offense can't score there, and if Khalil Mack gets to Patrick Mahomes, or if Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are both hurt or something, I think the Chiefs could win that game 9-6. You know, I think that that's their for better teams as well. I don't really expect this defense to lose a game where the offense puts up 50 points like we saw happen last year. I'm genuinely gaining an amount of confidence in this defense that maybe this will all come back to bite me. Maybe it's been 3 weeks of the false Chiefs, but even then, the games before, like the Jags, Raiders, and Ravens games, with the exception of the fourth quarter against the Ravens, defense was fine. I mean, they were fine in all those games, honestly. Like, it was pretty good, actually, in those three games. Again, not perfect, and lots of issues that you saw come up more later. The Lions game, not what you want. The Texans game, not what you want. At this point, though, I've got as many A's as F's on this roster, on the schedule for the Chiefs defense. And I got more B pluses now than I do D's. I'm optimistic. I guess that's the long and short of it, I suppose. I'm optimistic about what the Chiefs defense has done, and I think you should be too. Like I said earlier, and I promise not to just constantly run back to what I've written, but I am excited about the first column that went up on The Athletic today by me. It digs into more of the stats of this defense evolving, and also tells a story that I told on this, Almost Entirely Sports, back in June, I think it was, about Charvarius Ward and Steve Spagnuolo back during mini camps. And so if you want to go check that out, if you're already subscribing to The Athletic, it's there for you for no extra cost. And if you're not, there's a free trial that I've tweeted the link to. You go check it out if you're interested in that. And if not, that's okay. I'll keep talking here on these radio waves. You can access it for free. You just turn it on 810. Or if you are going to miss this next segment, maybe you're catching up from something else, if you're going elsewhere, about to get out of your car or whatever, go subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. Because coming up next, we're going to talk to Seth Kaiser of The Athletic about his Chris Jones film review, his experience in Arrowhead, and how on Saturday night he and his family ended up in my apartment using my bidet. That's next.
The most powerful sports station in America has a home in Kansas City. This is Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's Tuesday, so it's time, or a little past time, to talk to Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter, at RealMNChiefsFan. He'll tweet about being a lawyer and a pastor and having 100,000 kids. You can also read all of his work up on The Athletic, where he is now, I mean, at best, the second-best writer now contributing to The Athletic. Clearly because I think Nate's stuff has a higher merit, Seth.
Yeah, I've always considered myself fighting for second place, and you know, to Nate, and now at least there's a third writer, so I'm not insulting myself quite so much. I just wanted to say that I'm happy you took the time to talk to me today.
Yeah,
knowing what I know now, that you are now a big shot columnist with The Athletic.
Right.
I'm just amazed that you remember my name. I don't know if you remember, Josh. This isn't the first time we talked. I actually called the Chiefs postgame show.
A big fan.
On Sunday.
Yeah, Steph from Minnesota. I remember that.
Yeah, it was a great time. Well, are you sure it wasn't Steph?
That's what actually I said. Yeah, Steph from Minnesota, I think.
Yeah.
But the basketball player.
Oh my goodness. The entire vehicle in which I was driving found it very amusing, except my wife, who's still mad at you, but that's a whole other story.
I think that's funnier, actually, if we don't explain why your wife is mad at me. I think we'll leave that one there and explain what else happened. So listen, here's the whole deal right now. My first column with The Athletic went up today, and it's, you know, I'm on the medal stand because there are only three people writing about the Chiefs regularly, so that's good enough for me. Bronze medal, I'm good with it. Seth has a piece about Chris Jones up right now. We will talk about that later. And there's a new Times Ours episode from Monday. Late Monday, really went up late Monday with me and Steph here and, of course, Nate Taylor. It's excellent, and there's something that happens in the middle of the episode that I just think you're really going to want to hear. It was all very good, though. But all of that, Steph, all of that gets pushed to the side here while we describe and discuss what your weekend consisted of. Go ahead and start from the beginning as you were departing Minnesota for me.
You know, I'm sure people want to hear what the game was like, but if, talking about the important stuff, we left Minnesota, it was like 20 degrees when we left. We roll into Kansas City, it's like 50 degrees. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was great.
Just on a side note, absolutely wonderful. Had a great weekend. I got to see Union Station. I went to the World War I Museum. Did all kinds of fun things. However, the pinnacle of the weekend, Josh, it was not the trip to Arrowhead.
No?
No. The pinnacle of the weekend, I don't know if you know this, but on Saturday evenings, Q39 has a wait list of like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Did you know that? I didn't know that.
I hadn't tried to go on a Saturday night at, you know, 7:30 or whatever, so I was not expecting that type of reservation list, no.
Yeah, where they were just like, yeah, you know, it's going to be about 2.5 hours. So now, just words of the wise for everyone, Q39 has tremendous food, but you need to call.
Right.
Just call the day of or the day before, because I think, you know, if it's two and a half hours out, people have probably been reserving for just a day or two, but it's not like, oh, we can't get you in at all. So it's not like you need to call a month in advance. Anyway, and so we were desperate. We didn't know what to do. And then we thought, you know, it would be fun. I'm just going to invite myself over to Josh's apartment, which he went along with for some unknown reason.
Let me jump in real quick here to give you sort of my view at this moment here. This is, you know, like any good movie, the climactic event has happened, and now we shift perspectives. I was driving from I live in Overland Park, but I was driving from downtown Kansas City back to Overland Park to meet you guys at Q39, and you call and you're like, hey, I know you're probably almost here, but it's like a 2.5 hour wait. What should we do? So you guys decide, oh, Jack Stack is pretty close and was also excellent.
Oh, man, so good.
It was great. And say, all right, well, Jack Stack, the wait's like an hour and a half. It'll take us like, you know, half an hour to get there, maybe 15, 20 minutes, whatever. We'll just go by there. And I said, I remember what I said, because some things that, you know, the words that you wish you could take back, you remember forever. I said, okay, that sounds great. I'm actually pretty close to my apartment right now, so I'm going to make a pit stop there, drop some stuff off, and then I'll meet you guys there. And then I heard you, like, move the phone, like, mic away from your mouth as if you were were talking to everyone else in the car or in the restaurant or whatever, going, oh, hey, guys, you want to go over to Josh's place and hang out? And you were just like, yeah, let's do that. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, come on up. Come on over. That'll be great. How far away are you guys? Like, oh, like 10 minutes. Cool. Very good. So then I begin speeding back to my apartment. I get the text from you that you guys are like, I think at one point I only texted you for like 10 minutes, just ETA? Because listen, my apartment's not—it's not messy, or it's not dirty, certainly, but it's a little messy in its perfect usual form. Entropy has set in over a week of me being very busy, and I got stuff just out. And then you say you're about 5 minutes away. I go into like Tasmanian devil cleaning mode just to try to get bleep off the floor, honestly. Not literal bleep, figurative bleep. And then I hear...
Yeah, I didn't see any literal bleep, so
there was,
that's good.
There was not. I put that all in the closet. And then I get a knock at my door that is basically the Grim Reaper coming for my soul. And back to you.
And so my wife and my sister and my brother-in-law, who are a delightful group of people.
That's great.
I heard you say, well, would you guys just want to come here? Now, did you say that? No. But it's what I heard. And I thought, hey, you know, it might be fun. But I think I gave you an out that's not, like, really an out. I was like, well, I mean, would that be okay with you? Which is like, what are you supposed to do in that situation?
Nothing.
You know, like, you could have been like, no, I'd rather you didn't. I'd have been like, oh. Oh, very okay. And so there's a life lesson for you there. If you suggest things, it forces the other person to be rude to say no.
Yep.
Rather than asking. So that's what you do is you get a plan in motion. Be like, what? My family's not good enough to come to your apartment, Josh? Like, what's the deal? And so, yeah, and so we get there. And just on a side note, so we're driving there, and my wife, who has met you, but, you know, she feels like she knows you all right because we do so much radio together. And we, you know, I obviously talk about you constantly.
Right. Can't kid your mind off.
We drive into your neighborhood. And, I mean, just for the record, for everyone listening, I do have Josh's address saved into my phone now.
Yeah,
and,
I assume that was true. Could you please not tweet it out, though? That would be super cool.
Okay, I won't tweet it out.
Okay.
But for anyone, you know, I am bribable. I'm just saying. It's not like I'm above being bribed.
No.
You know, I do a little background check to
You're
make sure
You're just a lawyer and a pastor.
An
why wouldn't you take a bribe, lawyer, Pastor Seth?
Exactly. I'm glad you. I'm exactly. That's an excellent question. So we arrive, and I was surprised, you know, because I mean, I remember my living conditions when I was 24, and I find myself in a swanky neighborhood surrounded by swanky people with monocles and smoking cigars or cigarettes with those really long handle type things
yes,
on them,
like Cruella De Vil.
And I just, you know, I get out. Yeah, I get out, and Cruella De Vil and the Monopoly guy are looking at me. And they say, what are you doing here, old chap? And I'm looking for Josh Briscoe. And so that is how we arrived at your apartment. It was a highlight of the entire weekend. It was wonderful. We had a great time. And, of course, the pinnacle of the weekend, which I'm sure everyone's so interested in, except the people. Look, if people have hung on for this long as we haven't talked football,
they're
going to hang on for two more minutes.
100%.
To know that I tried out a bidet.
Yes, first
because you
time.
Have a bidet, Josh.
Yes,
Let's
I do.
Talk about that.
Yes.
You have a bidet.
I do. So, first of all, Cruella De Vil Monopoly Man getting out of the apartment next to mine to invite you in. Unbelievable imagery. This is why you're the second best rider on the Athletic Kansas City. And Nate honestly should feel the heat at that point because that was excellent. You had a beautiful picture there. One of the first things that I did whenever I moved into my apartment after I paneled all the walls with pure gold, the next thing that I did
sure.
was I bought a better shower head that has like you can take the you know it's like a wand one or whatever so you can you know like spray down by hand and have it up there. I love a high water pressure. This is important to me. Cleanliness is important to me. And I bought a bidet because a friend of mine, a good longtime friend of mine, had got this exact one for his house and he just swore by it. So I got one because it was like $25 on Amazon. Now, again, I used to wipe with $25, as you know, because you've now seen my living situation. So I thought $25
right.
for this experiment, absolutely worth it. It sits on top of my toilet. It's like it's using the same water supply as the intake of the water in my apartment. And I have grown to genuinely love this bidet. It has improved my quality of life, and I suggest it to everyone to the point that I literally offered you the opportunity to use it in my apartment.
Right, which, let me just clarify, I didn't need to use it.
True.
I didn't literally use the toilet and do the things required to really need the bidet.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see what the experience is like.
Yes.
Just for the sake of making sure that we don't bend too juvenile in this conversation, because God forbid we do that.
No, absolutely not.
I would just say, here's a counterpoint to anyone listening to this, whether live on 810, where we're currently talking about a bidet instead of sports.
It's really late, Seth. It's fine. We're coming on a
fine.
He's not paying attention territory.
Yep. And we're on the podcast. I'm sure Josh loves it. But I would just tell anyone out there that the sound I made when I sat down and I thought, okay, how does this thing work? And I pushed the lever. And I kind of had it planned in my head, like, as my wife's outside the door, and I'm just like, I'm going to make a funny noise, you know, and say something. But instead, what happened was a fire hose apparently was unleashed, and the water was the temperature of approximately, I don't know what the temperature is in the northern Atlantic where the salt water keeps it from freezing, but approximately that. Whatever killed Leo in the Titanic, it was about that temperature. And I happened to discover that I have a gift for something,
uh-huh.
And it is, because I was warned before I went in that, well, you might have to, figure out where to aim, as it were. I figured out that I am a veritable dead shot when it comes to bidet use, in that I don't need a second shot. I am on the money, right on target, and I let out a sound that had Jazz apparently look around the apartment and go, do you have a dog?
Yeah, that happened. That genuinely happened.
And then I emerged to hear the hysterical sound of my sister and brother-in-law and wife and former friend Josh laughing hysterically. So it was the highlight of my weekend and at the same time the low light of my adult life.
That is, that's all fair. That's a story well told. I was just trying to stay far away from the microphone so I can use all of that for future production purposes. Because to add to your usual almost entirely sports intro, man who had the highest and lowest point of his adult life all at once, that feels like that could probably make it.
And then cut in with me saying I am the dead shot of bidets.
Yep, and that one, you saying it right then might actually do it. That might make the cut. I'm not totally sure yet. We'll figure it out.
Good.
Oh,
I'm happy to help.
This is, in case you just joined us partway through, this is professional Chiefs analyst and beloved sports columnist and film review expert of media empire The Athletic, Seth Kizer, here on Sports Radio 810, a real radio station, the most powerful all-sports radio station in the country. That's all true. Everything I just said was true as we wrap up our bidet-based conversation. It was stupendous. And you guys are all invited over whenever you want, as long as you give me more than 15 minutes of warning to get my bleep together. My hospitality goes only so far.
Sure. Yeah, it was good. And the Chiefs played a game.
They
so
did.
Was that too.
They did, and you went to it. And if you want to read Deadshot of Bidet, that's just new. That you got to change your Twitter handle, Seth. At Bidet Deadshot did write about Chris Jones specifically, and I don't have to get like into the X's and O's of it just yet. But I know that one of the reasons you wanted to write about Chris Jones is because what was happening in Arrowhead. So you guys all drove down here not just to use my bidet, although I imagine it was worth the drive, but to go to the game and experience Chiefs Vikings and throughout all of that, you talked a little bit about Chris Jones and his impact, like, even again, not just on the field but throughout the stadium on Sunday, and I thought it was really, really interesting.
Right.
That impact did not come through on the broadcast well enough.
It didn't. So I was really disappointed when I went back and rewatched the broadcast that, they cut out almost immediately after Sorensen made that great play, sniffing out that throw to the left side and, making it 3rd and 17, which is a real tough down regardless. And, there's a commercial, and it was a long commercial
sure
break.
Was.
And they cut back in with like 10 seconds before the play was going to start, right before the Vikings are breaking huddle. And so all you see is you hear the crowd being very loud, and you see Chris Jones kind of shouting. right? Mm-hmm. And marching back and forth just a little bit. What that cuts out is a solid 3 minutes of that exact thing. So, you know, they call the timeout. It's third down. The stadium is relatively quiet because, you know, it's the two-minute warning. And Chris Jones just started marching all over the dang place, just freaking out, just losing his mind, hollering at the other team, hollering at the defensive players, hollering at the crowd. And then, I mean, he just got everyone fired up. It was so cool to see because he would not let it stop. And it's the first time I've ever been there as a crowd stayed loud throughout the entire two-minute warning. And it was such a cool moment as people, you know, people kind of figure out what was going on. Everyone starts cheering, and they just kept it going and kept it going. He just kept that energy and kept it up and would not let up. And, you know, I mean, crud, seriously, it was a minute and a half longer than I think everyone thought it would be. And if you think, well, that's not that long to stream, that is a long time to stream.
Yeah, it is.
That is. My voice still isn't the same. Because that's the point where I really lost my voice.
No, it wasn't from the bidet. It was in the stadium. You're saying you lost your voice, not on the bidet.
Right. And then, I mean, and then not only does he do all that, gets the crowd incredibly fired up, then he is the one who immediately beats his blocker with a great hand swipe, gets inside leverage, and lays a hit on Cousins that leads to Cousins, for some reason, throwing the ball away rather than just eating the sack and killing clock. And it was just a tremendous, tremendous moment. Just a reminder, he is the heartbeat of that defense, and they've done well without him, but their ceiling is entirely different with him back because you never know when he's just going to take over a game.
By his absence and by the defense improving, which is non-coincidentally what the gist of my column that went up today is about, the fact that they've improved in spite of the absence of Chris Jones and Frank Clark, for the most part, you know, they've been without one of those guys at least for a good stretch now, and they've been getting better over these last 3 weeks. It is in spite of those guys, and man, I don't think I needed it, but I appreciated being reminded of that against the Vikings because of the unbelievable things that Chris Jones is able to do. He walked a professional offensive lineman back into Kirk Cousins like he was a blocking sled.
Yes. That is, it'll always be the manliest way to sack a quarterback,
yes,
is to use his own offensive lineman. And the cool thing about that snap, if you watch it, is he initially gets stonewalled for a split second,
yeah,
and the lineman is underneath his pads. And everything we're taught about football is if the other guy is lifting you, you're doomed. The other guy got low. It's all over. But he repositioned his hands inside and then just, I mean, to say he walked him back into Cousins' lap is to ignore how fast it went.
Yeah.
Because once he got going, I mean, he scooted him backwards, and it was such a great play. And, you know, Ogba did a nice job getting some pressure too. But that's the thing with Jones, and we've talked about this a ton, the ability to win one-on-one and the ability to do it quickly in a way that destroys the offensive design of the play. Now, it doesn't mean the play won't succeed, because mm-hmm, there's always a chance, like, you know, like a quarterback will make a miraculous throw or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can destroy the design of a play, and Jones does that between 4 to 6 times a game. And when you're talking about a game that only consists of 60 snaps,
yeah,
and now all of a sudden anywhere between 8 to 10% of them are just ruined from the outset, it's massively impactful. And you saw that, you know, we talk about the intangible, the emotion. He is the emotional leader. He is the conduit through which all that stuff flows. He gets other guys fired up. And he also allows Spagnuolo to not have to blitz every snap to,
yeah,
get pressure. And that was one thing. They kind of changed their strategy against the Vikings from what they'd been doing previously to where they still blitzed at times, and when they did it, it was super effective. But they didn't have to all the time because they knew they could get pressure without rushing, without blitzing, because Jones can beat guys individually. He just changes the entire dynamic of the defense.
And he was moved around, honestly. Like, as the week went on, I started warming up to the idea, but back on Tuesday or so, he said, hey, do you think Chris Jones is gonna show up all over that defensive line? I would have said, I did say no, because I didn't know if the versatility that we saw in a 3-4 outside guy moving in to a 4-3 interior tackle, I didn't know if that flexibility would translate, and they ended up going to actually a handful of 3-man fronts in this game, and they put Jones on the end, then he was in the middle. So what did you think of the way Spagnuolo moved Jones around whenever they were playing this game without their two starting ends?
I loved it. It took advantage of his versatility, and it showed Spagnuolo's willingness and ability to work with what he has. Because like you said, Okafor and Clark were both out. Now, Ogba and Passanio have played well, but I still think they are a step down in terms of consistency, a fairly significant one at times. And they're also, you know, when they've only got a couple guys, it's harder to rotate guys in and out and all that stuff. And I think by switching to that 3-man front, it kind of takes advantage of the versatility of all those guys and the big bodies and their ability to line up multiple guys in weird spots. It was just basically him taking chicken crap and turning it into chicken salad, for lack of a better term, because you've got two of your important players hurt. You say, okay, well, I'm not going to try to force things. I'm not going to say, oh, the system will prevail. No, I'm going to change things up and best suit the personnel that I have available, one of whom happens to be a game wrecker, so I can move them all over the field. And so, yeah, that 3-man, they were in a 34-some snaps. It was kind of weird to see.
On that first third down, which was Chris Jones's first snap, Tanel Passanio was a nose. Like, he was lined up helmet to helmet with the center. Tanel Passanio was a stand-up linebacker last year, a stand-up edge rusher, and not playing to his strengths. Like, I am way in on what Spagnuolo's gotten out of him this year, but just the amount that the Chiefs have moved stuff around defensively this year has just been, for me, unrelentingly positive. Like, I didn't expect to be at a point where I'm as tickled with what Spagnuolo has done. You used the word tinkering on Times Ours on Monday, and I installed that for the column because I love it. I think that's exactly right. It seems like he's always tinkering, but not just for the sake of tinkering. Spagnuolo is tinkering with all these guys and moving them around in a way that is creating production without really important players. I've been fascinated by it this whole time.
Absolutely, and it's important, like you said, don't tinker just for the sake of tinkering, but think, okay, what do these guys do well? Because there are very few defenders in the NFL that do everything at a high level.
Yep.
Most guys are better at some things than other things, and, you know, are better at rushing a certain kind of way. And so, you know, the last couple of games, you haven't seen as many stunts, but you have seen a lot of blitzing. And then this last game, suddenly you saw, well, we're going to rush four, but you're not going to know from where. And then everyone's going to drop into coverage, which is such a mix-up. And I just think it's so great to see Spagnuolo. He tends to alter his tendencies.
Yeah.
Like, that's the big thing. You're not seeing a lot of predictability in the fronts that he's going to use or the personnel he's going to use. You know, Reggie Ragland went from not playing at all to suddenly playing a vital role in the defense. You see guys like Tanel Passanio, you know, snap count increase. Now, part of that is due to injuries, but part of that is due to just saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. They've been willing to rotate guys, like having Fennell in there and just like, no, we're going to give you an important role. And teams don't really know what to expect from Spagnuolo. And that's a big deal. Through 9 weeks, we are 9 weeks in, and I don't think he's married himself to any one style of defense.
Yeah.
And that's going to be huge, you know, in a few weeks when they play the Patriots. And then also in January and February when they're playing the best coach teams, it's going to be huge that they look at the tape and say, we're not sure exactly what kind of defense they're going to play.
It's so exciting, and I know this might just be like Chiefs fans getting out of a really, really crummy relationship, and now just like this average dude is Prince Charming. I don't know. Maybe there's an element of that, because that amount of like not just letting your scheme solve the issues and then really not solve them was obviously, that was the 2018 season, but it's super, super refreshing. Offensively, though, we're 20-some minutes in. We started with bidet talk, I guess. But, like, this game gave us so much defensively that, like, we can we accidentally forget to talk about how excellent Matt Moore was in certain spots and what Andy Reid did for this offense. And so I'm sure you're working on this for later in the week. We have the full film review up on The Athletic. But in person and with a little bit of rewatching you may have been able to do so far, what did the Chiefs do offensively on Sunday?
Well, you know, Moore, it's just he deserves to be commended. I mean, he's done a very good job. You know, he's done about as much as you can ask for a backup. It is worth noting that, interestingly enough, I noticed him, like his bad tendencies, more against the Vikings than I did against the Packers. I think he had more bad snaps in terms of his pocket presence kind of getting exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Because Moore is not great under pressure. Like, he's willing to throw the ball under pressure, and I know there's all these PFF stats that are like, well, under pressure, he was like 6 for 7 for whatever. Yeah, when he gets rid of the ball, he does a great job, but he also takes some really bad sacks, and those aren't going to show up in your passer rating under pressure,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so he took a few really bad ones, lost a couple fumbles.
That was terrifying.
Those are rough plays.
I hated those.
Yep, and the big thing is with him, when the pressure kind of closes around him, you can see him, his eyes drop, and he's done.
Right.
It's very different from what you see with Mahomes, or even from like Alex Smith, who was a little better at getting out of there and running. So that's an obvious weakness of his, and it did cost him a few times. But other than that, I mean, he did a good job. He, if you wanted to, you know, say, you know, the play of the game for him. You know, making a couple of throws to Hill that needed to be made. And that's one good thing about him as a backup to Mahomes is he's not afraid to cut it loose and push the ball down the field. He's not as capable at it as Mahomes, but not many are. But he's willing to do it, and that gives guys like Tyreek Hill a shot. He's willing to stand in there and take a hit. And he also he had a real veteran play. You know, his plays of the game might have been, you know, on the run to Hill. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that really the one where he got hit as he threw, had he been able to put it in front of Hill, that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
But very few guys can do that. So the fact that he got it to him, great, big play. Finding him for that first touchdown, great, big play. But the biggest one was at the very end. You know, you've got a third down. They look like they're going to bring the same type of blitz that they brought a couple times. He audibles real quick, adjusts Hill's route, and just dumps it right over the top for a perfect play that resulted in a much easier field goal attempt for Harrison Butker. Those veteran moments, he's not afraid of them, and he did a good job overall. And so, I mean, I'm very impressed with Moore, but just watching Hill and how fast he is and Hardman, how fast he is, and Watkins did a great job with some really tough catches. Kelce did a great job with contested catches. Watching that whole offense together, I'm going to be honest, I'm very proud of Moore. I think he's done a great job, but it made me think, man, I really want to see Mahomes now that the whole gang is back together.
Yeah. I mean, that was the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, listen, I mean, none of us have the MRIs, right? And Mahomes is out there jumping around and everything, but also I live in fear of the first time he gets hit down low, if that kneecap moves, it's probably not going to be as lucky of a result as it was the first time. And I'm not going to tell you what I think necessarily, but whenever you do try to synthesize what you feel about wanting to see Mahomes back, but also wanting to make sure you see Mahomes playing in December and January and, Lord willing, February, does anything from Matt Moore these last couple of weeks move the needle for you? Is there anything that has updated in terms of when you would want to see Mahomes back?
Not particularly, no. Moore, I anticipated Moore doing a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen enough of Andy Reid's offense, and I've seen enough of the playmakers they have, that I figured he would do all right, even against really good defenses. So that doesn't move the needle for me. What moves the needle for me is the same thing as it was last week. What does the MRI say?
Yep.
What does the swelling say? What do the doctors say?
Yep.
If the doctors say he's as good as it's going to get until off-season surgery, and you know, we think the chances of a redislocation are pretty low, and he looks good, he's not feeling any soreness, all the same things that I said last week apply to this week. You play him if you can. Because the reality is the Chiefs are not out of the one seed race.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people were starting to kind of concede it. That's why you had people like, oh, maybe we cheer for, you know, the Patriots to beat the Ravens, you know, because of that two seed. Well, I mean, here's the deal. The Chiefs have the tiebreaker over the Ravens.
Right.
So that doesn't worry me too much. Right. And honestly, after seeing the Ravens, and I know everyone's high on the Ravens right now because they beat the Patriots, I think the Chiefs are a better team than the Ravens by a fair margin.
Yeah.
They beat them pretty easily at Arrowhead. You can talk about what Jackson did in the second half or the fourth quarter. The game was over, man. It was over. Yep. And that was without Tyreek Hill and with Mahomes not being completely himself. So I just don't fear them. But the thing with the Patriots is they've got one loss now. The Chiefs have three losses. And the Patriots have a tough schedule in the second half. And they had a friggin' cakewalk during the first half of the season.
Yep.
So that one seed isn't out of the question. And so I think, you know, you get Mahomes out there if he can be out there. Otherwise, you're just waiting for the purposes of waiting.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. The one thing that I have railed against at least a little bit is the idea that, like, oh, well, you know, get him back, and if it's I guess the idea that anything from Matt Moore could change where I'm at with Patrick Mahomes is a little bit of flawed logic, because it's completely about the state of his knee. And so, to your point, if he's good to go, I'm excited to see him. I also think they would beat the Titans with, you know, Kyle Shermer at this point. Like, I think that's
right. And they should. They should. Although, you know, that was a big emotional win they just had. You want to be careful for letdowns, all that fun stuff. But they're in a really good position. I mean, considering the schedule they've played, the injuries they've had, 6-3 is extremely impressive.
Yeah.
And so now it's a matter of, okay, let's see if we can get everyone back together, start flexing those muscles again, become that team that everyone was so terrified of. Because teams, they're not terrified of the Chiefs at this point. They were early in the year, mm-hmm. then, you know, the injuries and everything. But teams are going to start figuring out, especially if they have another strong defensive performance against the Titans, and they've got a good chance of doing that, and they get Mahomes back, people are going to start figuring out, which I'm amazed they still haven't. It still hasn't been the national discourse how improved the defense is.
Yep.
You'd think it would be.
Yep.
But they are much better than they were last year, and that should terrify teams.
Yes.
It's like, man, they are what they were last year, except the defense is better. Oh, no. But that's kind of – they've flown under the radar a bit without Mahomes.
Yeah.
I think this would be a great week if he's feeling healthy to put the fear of God back in the rest of the league.
Follow that up with a little Monday night in Mexico. Maybe go ahead and throw up like a 42-10, go into the bye week. Fire and brimstone.
Absolutely.
Remind me what's coming up next for you on The Athletic. We got the Friday episodes of Time's Ours for Athletic subscribers. And then I know you're doing the big film review. What are you looking forward to specifically for that piece?
For the film review, I want to look at Passanio. I want to look at how Saunders and Nadi have improved against the run. I want to look at Charvarius Ward. I'm going to take a little bit of a look at Moore as well. And there's a couple other things, just some of those things that maybe people missed throughout the game. You know, that's kind of the point of these film reviews. It's just go a little bit deeper, find things, you know, answer. I try to pick out players that everyone's asking about so you can get just a little bit deeper and be on the box score for those things. And then after that, hopefully Friday, I'll be writing for some things I'm looking for against the Titans.
It's always great to get this insight from you, Seth. It's always great to be graced with your presence in my apartment when I didn't ask for it, as you use my bidet with my permission, I guess. It all comes together for this beautiful, beautiful story and what was a beautiful, beautiful weekend. Thank you, Seth.
Thank you. And permission's a moving target, Josh.
That's true. And now he knows where I live. And honestly, I haven't been able to find my second key since Seth and his family went back to Minnesota. So I'm a little bit worried. You can follow him on Twitter at either Real MN Chiefs Fan or Bidet Deadshot. Seth Kaiser of The Athletic here on Sports Radio 810.
Kansas City's hometown sports station. Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Still talking Chiefs here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Abrisco with you for one more segment this evening here on 810. I said that already. If you want to make sure you're getting all of the goodness from the show, make sure you subscribe to the Almost Entirely Sports podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts, or you can just listen live in the 810 mobile app. Also, you get the podcasts in the 810 mobile app. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Brisco. I'll tweet about whatever it is that I'm doing as the schedule shifts. We're back for Almost Entirely Sports tomorrow from 8 until 10 with me and Beards and Rudy, and it'll all be wonderful as the gang gets back together. We touched on this a little bit towards the end there with Seth last segment. But I wanted to at least voice my general Patrick Mahomes' knee now what stance. If his knee is healthy, he should probably start playing immediately. If his knee is not yet healthy, it doesn't matter literally at all who is under center for the Chiefs in his absence. Now, there are other layers of that, but that's the thesis statement, right? If you look at the Matt Moore nice few games in a row thing, and that eases your spirit a little bit, great. Love it. Glad you have that. I feel pretty good about it. I think the Chiefs will be the Titans with or without Mahomes this week. But it shouldn't influence your decision, because if you say Matt Moore's playing well, so we're going to give Mahomes another week, the inverse has to be true. If he was playing more poorly, would you want to bring Mahomes back sooner, even if the knee wasn't 100% where it needed to be? For me, the answer is no. I said this on the postgame show. If Nathan Peterman was playing for the Chiefs against the Titans this week, I would not rush Mahomes back. I wouldn't push it for a game against the Titans. I wouldn't push it for a regular season game. Obviously, I don't think it's going to get to that point, but so you know where my head's at. If Mahomes is at a point, actually, I'm going to start that sentence over. Whenever Mahomes is at a point that his knee is as structurally sound as it is going to be this season without months of rest that would require an offseason, or without a surgery that would require an offseason, and I don't even know if that's on the table necessarily this offseason for him. It depends on a lot of factors that I don't know, because I'm not a doctor and I don't have his MRI results. Even if I did, I wouldn't know what I was looking at. But if his knee is as structurally sound as it can get in the 2019 season, he should play. Just like he should play all before this injury happened. I said he should play on the injured ankle because I wasn't worried about re-injury. This is different. I've been over this ground plenty of times already, but, you know, Rick Burkholder said it was pretty much the best case scenario they could have hoped for whenever they got the MRI results after the kneecap dislocation. If it happens again, I'm guessing they won't be that lucky. So the chance of re-injury is the factor here that determines what you should be doing if you're the Chiefs. I think it's pretty close to being just about that simple. If there is any thought that another week or another 2 weeks or another 3 weeks would move Mahomes from 20% chance of re-injury to 5% chance of re-injury, we'll see you in December. Those are pretty big numbers. If it moves from 20% against the Titans to 18%, if he comes back after the bye against the Raiders, that might be negligible enough that you'd rather have Mahomes for these next two games and then you give him the bye week and everything. That's totally fine. Whenever you get to that point of decimal dissection, that changes the conversation, right? But I think to start with Matt Moore on any level, any sentence that starts with Matt Moore is not the right way to start a discussion about when Patrick Mahomes should return to the Chiefs. It's 100% for me about where his knee is at in terms of re-injury and then where it would be after next week, after the next week, after the bye week that would follow that. Whenever it is essentially as secure as it can be within this season, then he goes. This isn't the conversation that we had about Eric Berry somewhere. It's like, hey, you know, it seems like there's a pretty good chance that every time he goes out there, there's a chance of re-injury, so maybe just hold him off until the last, you know, 2 weeks of the regular season and then the playoffs, and then just hope that whenever his Achilles tears again, it's, you know, at the end of the Super Bowl. That's also very macabre, but it's how we were having some of those discussions about his, you know, Haglund's deformity and all of that. That story will be a mystery until somebody gets the scoop on it in 5 years from now. But we're not talking about Mahomes' re-injury as like a definite thing. I just want it to be as unlikely as possible before he steps back out on the field. That's all. I don't want anyone to start the conversations with Matt Moore as the first topic, because I really do think that would be misguided whenever the only thing that really matters is Patrick Mahomes. And now, with or without him, again, I think they beat the Titans. That Chargers game gets a little more interesting after they beat the Packers on Sunday in LA. That game will be in Mexico, as long as Shakira doesn't have an impromptu show a few days before. And then it's the bye week after that. As soon as we started getting word that maybe it wasn't catastrophic when he suffered that injury on Thursday night against the Broncos, I told you December 1st against the Raiders would be fine by me. I have a little bit of optimism for the idea of, hey, what if he comes back for that Chargers game and then gets a whole bye week to really rest up if anything swells up, if anything irks him, anything like that. I can't shake the vision of Mahomes down again against the freaking Titans or on the field in Mexico against the Chargers with his legs stuck out again, because there was a thought of, oh, you know, it's the difference between this week and coming back after the bye is, you know, it's only a 15% difference. What's the harm? I don't hate patience in this regard, I guess I should say. Seth mentioned that the one seed is not out of play. He's right. The Chiefs have 3 losses. The Patriots now have 1, and the Chiefs could hand them another. And then the Patriots' schedule for these next few weeks is really, really tough. I think the worst team they play might be the Cowboys, actually. Like, it really is pretty wild and super open still for, if not even the one seed, certainly the 2. Like, right now, the second best record in football is the Buffalo, in the AFC at least, is the Buffalo Bills. They're 6-2 right now. They're tied with the Ravens now, and the Chiefs have lost the tiebreaker to the Texans and Colts. But with all of that, I mean, we're halfway through the season. All of those teams will lose more games, and that's all still, again, like, that's in play for the Chiefs. I just don't want to start any of these conversations with Matt Moore or the one seed or the 2 seed or the AFC West whenever the only thing that really matters to me is, how's his knee? That's what matters. But I'm sure that that's a sentiment shared at Arrowhead Stadium between Andy Reid and Brett Veach and Rick Burkholder, the head trainer. I imagine that that is very clear in their minds that this team's games will matter the most in January, not in November. So November games could help you be in a better spot to get to January. Or once you're in January, absolutely true. But the best thing for their odds is to have Patrick Mahomes out there. So I'm going to go ahead and be the person that preaches patience until he's out there. Whenever he's out there, I'll be thrilled to watch him play football again. God knows that I want to watch Patrick Mahomes play football as soon as possible. I also want to see him play football as long as possible. So that's where I'm at for the time being. Thanks again for listening to this special edition of Late Night Chiefs Talk here on Sports Radio 810. Podcast is up. If you just search for Almost Entirely Sports, wherever you get your podcasts, and Almost Entirely Sports returns tomorrow night after several weeks of being bumped around by football and baseball and some KU basketball. The schedule will always be a little bit up and down, but you can make sure you always catch all of it. If you follow me on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, I'll tweet whenever the show's on its way. And if you subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports, wherever you get your podcasts, you will always find the latest hours of show up right there. Whole show gets podcasted. You won't miss anything if you subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Josh Briscoe. That's it. I'm out of here. I'm going to bed. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 8 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 810. Bye, Mom!
Follow the Chiefs right here on your home for the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl. Sports Radio 810 WHB.